Hey, what's going on, everyone? I'm excited to introduce to you Dean and Ben, who are two of the most positive people that I know in the world. So excited to share their knowledge. So I know Ben because we both work at LinkedIn Learning. But just a quick disclaimer, these are my opinions and Ben's and Dean's opinions. So, this is not representation of LinkedIn's, this is just my opinion and just thoughts. So I just wanted to put that out there. And so Ben is a mid-market or senior relationship manager at LinkedIn, and Dean is a career development coach, and he's also an author of Mastering the Basics, and he owns his own career coaching company as well. Welcome, guys.
Thanks
Great
for
to be
having
here.
us. I was here 2 weeks ago, but it's great to be back on the world famous Davidson Hong podcast. And honestly, really excited to be here with Dean. Dean, I think the second LinkedIn Learning course I ever watched was Mastering Your Sales Pipeline, or Managing Your Sales Pipeline, if I got the title correctly there, with the Dean Carroll. So.
Well, I think I met most met you both when you first were starting with the company, and you watched my courses, and then we connected. And Ben, we've had a number of conversations back and forth. And Davidson, anytime I can get a free breakfast when I was in Manhattan, I was go up to the LinkedIn Learning offices, LinkedIn offices, and had that beautiful breakfast. So so both of you guys, it's been a pleasure to get to know since you've been with the LinkedIn Learning team.
Yeah, that breakfast is no joke, Dean. I out of all the things I miss as a result of not being in the office, it is the like croissant bread twists at the Manhattan office. At the LinkedIn office in Manhattan. It's like, I don't know what those are, but they're very good.
It's tough, isn't it? And when I go for recording out in the Carpinteria offices, they have this beautiful setting. The beach is not that far by, and then you have the mountains in the background, and the beautiful lunch and breakfast. And I'm thinking, this is, I could get used to this. So
Right.
it's an organization that works so hard and is so dedicated and so committed and so energized that a little thing like a nice breakfast is a great payback and a good lunch. So
Yep.
you're fortunate with that.
We are for sure. But anyway, Davidson, not to talk about breakfast the whole time.
it's good to to have light in the world right now. With the for those who are listening to this, after the election time, or we have the election coming up really soon. Still in the middle of a pandemic that looks like it's not going to end anytime soon, right? Who knows? A lot of people saying there's a second wave coming. So yeah, I just wanted to spread some more positivity and light in the world, just because like every time I talk to any of these two amazing human beings, I always feel much 100 times better. So I think this would be a good conversation. What I think would be awesome is just learn a little bit how you both think about like mindset and taking care of yourself and well-being and just things related to attitude and like psychology, because it's all related. Because I do think that's so important on how we manage our the content that's coming through our heads and how you, because I do think how you both perceive the world is very positive, and I'm curious to dig a little bit deeper into that.
I'll go first, and I'll try to go first as much as possible because what Dean says will be more impactful, and I don't want to have to follow up whatever he says. So, I think the first thing I would say is like, Davidson, while your words are very kind and your perception is somewhat apt, I also think I'm very much not a finished product when it comes to mindset, or my own personal psychology as I approach my job. Like I still struggle with continuing to maintain a positive mindset about things, both inside and outside of the workplace. So this is very much something that I am eager to share because it's something I'm constantly learning, and I think I've done a lot of introspection with regards to over the past couple of years. But the main thing that I harp on with folks all the time is you know, when I find people getting down about stuff, especially professionally, I'm like, hey, what, you know, what's going on in your personal life that's positive these days? Like, what's going on with your kids? How's your wife doing? How's your family doing? What do you got planned this weekend? Because people sometimes forget that when they open up their laptop or walk in the doors of their office building, that I'm still a person who is cared for, cares for other people, has hobbies, likes, things I'm good at outside of the office. And in my opinion, we ought to start with those before who we are as a professional, like what anchors you outside of the office. And that's sort of been the, I don't know, I suppose the lens through which I see my work, or I'm trying to see my work. And it's been really helpful for me. Like I said, it's been a challenge, but over the course of the year, I think it's been helpful for me to grow in that way.
Well, that's very perceptive. I mean, that's, you just nailed it. I mean, it's being aware, which ties in with emotional intelligence. You know, there's a great LinkedIn Learning course by Gemma Lee Roberts on emotional intelligence and being aware of others and understanding others. And it's also keeping things in perspective. And it's also understanding that it's okay to raise your hand and say, you know, I need some help. And too often we say, well, you know, I'm handling this okay. I like working remotely. I like being, I'm really an introvert. Yeah, that's fine. But this is tough right now with between the virus, working remotely, and we all have jobs and families and that whole checklist of things. And it can be overwhelming. And you guys are, I mean, I said it earlier before we came on the air, was you guys are real role models, both in your volunteer work, your spiritual work, what you do in the community. And it's also very important that we look after those who are the positive people too. And because it is a, you know, the three of us are very thoughtful and positive and caring, but that's a heavy burden at times too. And it's okay for us to say, you know, Ben, I need some help. Or David said, no, I can't handle this right now. I need a day off. And yeah, it's those personal days are really important in this day and age.
Yep.
Yeah, I've just this month I'm taking a bunch of days off. You know, I'm very lucky. You know, after watching a lot of Dean's courses, I'm sitting good for the year, right? So you know, I'm very fortunate. But this month I'm intentionally choosing to take a lot more time than I normally do. But because to your point, like you know, when you're always helping everyone else out, sometimes you forget that okay, like you need to take care of yourself first, you know, to fill the cup. So I'm excited. You know, I'm taking 3 days off this week to go hiking and just, you know, just be in nature. So I think that's going to really fill the cup. But yeah, I do think it's okay to acknowledge. I think it's interesting because I do notice a lot of my role models, like, you know, it really hurt me when they took their lives, like Anthony Bourdain, like, you know, he was someone I really looked up to because of a lot of the political stuff that he would do overseas and kind of bringing light to a lot of what's going on outside of the US. And you know, Robin Williams was someone who I really looked up to, who just seemed to be so positive, you know. But yeah, so it's interesting, you know, I think mental health is huge, especially during a pandemic. And I think it's always important, but I think it's now it seems like it's more okay for people to acknowledge that, you know, they're going through something.
It's something I see in my work, and it's actually very concerning to me. And thankfully, there are courses on LinkedIn Learning that are being offered for free right now that I encourage all the time for people to watch. And again, it's so easy to say, oh no, I'm okay. Well, it's better to say, I need some assistance. And again, it goes back to emotional intelligence. It's us being aware of those who are vulnerable. You know, the high profile people who have suffered that you just mentioned, Davidson, but it's the woman next door. It's the guy we used to work with. There's somebody who's managing a family. It's the poor group that's been furloughed and they're trying to pay the rent. They're just trying to eat. There's a lot of that undercurrent. And as we get, my biggest concern now is as we go into the winter, which is always difficult anyway, it gets darker earlier. We're a remote, we're at home. And if, you know, that's tough. And so it's looking out for those who are vulnerable. And I think that's an essential thing that all of us need to be talking more about. And the more we talk about it, I think the better we are that we can actually help people.
Yeah, I think, you know, it's interesting, right? Because I think in moderation, like being of service, like Ben, with a lot with what you do with your faith, being a deacon, you know, I think it's interesting because I do notice like the more I give, the more, if it's within moderation, right? If it's not like 99% of what you're doing like all the time, it does help me think like about how blessed I am, right? Like not from a place of like comparison, but just being of service, knowing that, okay, I'm making a difference in the world. Like I'm doing things to move society in the right direction is definitely something that fulfills me and gives me a lot of joy. But I do think, you know, it we still need time to ourselves, whatever it's, you know, some people it's like working out or meditation or going for a walk. Like I do think those are also important and not to forget about that as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think serving one another, caring for one another is something that's actually seemingly has become a little bit more challenging since the pandemic has started. It's like, hey, how, you know, I'm inside my apartment. How am I supposed to like serve someone or care for someone? And I feel as though we're wired towards service. There's something within us that wants to serve other people that, Davidson, kind of like you described, gives us a sense of like gratitude and connectedness. And it's important to remember that, you know, in times like these, it's like, you know, maybe I haven't gotten outside of myself. Maybe I haven't thought about someone else and, you know, what their needs are in a really long time. And I'm not going to start thinking about those people or doing some of those things so that I can just feel good and I want to fix that. But I'm doing that because I should serve that person and be thinking outside of myself and my needs and actually put myself in a position where I'm trying to help someone else solve a problem that they have and think about their needs. And I actually feel like it's become a disguise that, it's become, yeah, like a more disguised way almost to become more self-focused because we're spending so much time naturally with ourselves. So I don't know if that added a whole lot of flavor to the conversation, but I do think service is something that we're missing these days a little bit, and that it's usually pretty helpful for me to recenter, re-anchor with service. Yeah.
Well, I think what we're also facing is there's and I find it difficult. I mean, to be blunt, is that I'm on an emotional roller coaster because you see the anger in some people and from the politics and the hatred, and it's all come to the surface, and it's always been there. And it's like, so you try to get back to the positive, but then you can be really dragged down. So I am naturally a positive person. And I love that people always say, Dean, you're always so upbeat, but I have my moments. And, you know, this whole political environment and the anger and then issues with race and religion and creed. And it's I find it very disturbing, which is why you have to bring it back, as you said, Ben, and bring it back to a focus of, for me, it's I can't solve everything or I can't help everybody. But if I can, I start with one person. And how could I build it from there? And I think that's important for all of us to try. It again goes back to, we all have to have a role in this. And some people are more in tune to be able to do this. Ben, I mean, you're classic at this. Davidson, you're classic at this, being able to do this. But so people may be watching saying, well, I can't be like Ben. I can't be like Davidson. Find one person to reach out to and find one person to ask and see, how can I help you? Are you okay? And that's where it starts, I think. So it's, but I just admitted, I mean, I've had a career, I've had a great career, good family, but we all have roller coasters in our life and the highs and lows, and it's okay to admit that. And I think that's important for people to hear.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think too many of us, like, because most of us only post the highlights, right? So mm-hmm. when you look like a Dean, like, sometimes we don't know that you're going through a lot of this, right? Because on the outside, it just seems like, oh, he's always happy. He's always impacting. So it really does kind of show the relatedness that we all go through. But I do think, you know, most people on social media, right, they're never, most people wouldn't post like, hey, like I'm actually having like a really hard time, like, you know, or it might come out looking different, right? Like it, so yeah, that's a good reminder. Thanks, Dean.
You know, I have a note in my wallet that I posted, this is a few months ago. I've had a note in my wallet from that I wrote to myself. It was when I first started my very first job. And you know how that it's, you're overwhelmed when you first start, you're all excited. Then you realize, I don't know what the heck I'm doing. And, you know, and you got numbers to hit and you got sales calls to make. And I was like, and I was living by myself in Rochester, New York, and it's snowing. And I'm sitting there going, what's this all about? And I wrote down the date saying, this is a lousy day. And I hopefully someday will get better, but Dean, never forget. And I've kept it in my wallet for 40 years. Oh. And I talked about that in a LinkedIn post. And I got so many comments about that. People saying, Dean, thank you so much for just being genuine, being authentic. And again, we're all upbeat, but we do have our moments. And I still do.
Yeah. And I think salespeople are especially susceptible to this because we're taught to convince ourselves that we are like the greatest thing ever when things are going well in sales. Like you did this, you worked for it, you earned it. And, you know, none of us really want to admit the elephant in the room that like a lot of it's luck and just being around the net at the right time. That when we do have a lousy day or when something does upset us, and you know, if it's sales related, you have a deal that goes wrong, you make a mistake with the customer. Well, then because we've taught ourselves to believe that we are the most important, you know, factor in a deal going right or wrong, is that when it does go wrong, it's catastrophic for us. And it's like, I can't recover from this. I've just committed this, you know, mortal failure. I'm a fraud. I'm a terrible salesperson. How'd they ever hire me? And so I find that it's actually been healthier for me over time, even when things are going well, to be like, you know what, I did some things right here. I think I really treated the customer with kindness and respect, and that did, like, you know, hopefully aid the deal, but I'm not like this titan of sales. And, you know, reminding myself of that is actually helpful when things go poorly. And it's like, you know what, yeah, that was frustrating. And I took an L on that one, but yeah. I'm not questioning, you know, who I am as a person is what caused that deal to go awry, which I actually think is what happens implicitly with sellers a lot of the time. And probably where a lot of like you see a lot of false positivity in sales, manufactured positivity, because, you know, people don't know how to be authentic, you know, kind of because that paradigm that I just articulated, you either, because you're so convinced of yourself, it either goes extremely well or terribly. And then that actually leads to, on the extreme ends, a manufactured fake positivity or you know, a cynicism when things aren't going well, and a burnout. So I don't know. I think I'm able to see it more clearly, I guess, as a professional and through the lens of being a salesperson than I did, you know, 3-4 years ago when I wasn't in this profession.
Yeah. It ties in some about the perception of salespeople and, you know, you see these, the trainer, male and female, you're like this with their hands. Yes, you can always be successful in sales and I'm always hitting home runs and I'm the best. Well, you know, that's not real. You know, we talk about the stereotypes, you know, from movies, you know, like I talked recently about The Wolf of Wall Street. You know, that the guy went to jail, you know, and he's reformed himself. But that's not what sales is all about. And it is, we do have our highs and lows, and it's keeping that all in perspective. It's a very good point, Ben.
Yeah, I can't remember if it was a business mentor or a friend or who told me this, but they said that salespeople basically get paid to manage their emotions and the emotions of others. And it's a very human profession. You know, it's just communication and conversation and wants and desires and needs. I think the reason we get paid to do our jobs, you know, a lot of people come into a sales role and think on paper, this isn't that hard. And then you get in a situation where your emotions and someone else's emotions are, you know, so volatile. That's actually, I think, the reason why we probably get paid the way we do is because we're tasked with managing those things in a realistic way.
Goes back to emotional intelligence again. The best salespeople are aware, they listen, they understand, they have show empathy, they're curious. It's that whole checklist. And so again, goes back to emotional intelligence, which I think is the best, what the best salespeople are. We're often driven by saying sales is all about the close. Well, I think sales is all about sales discovery, you know, asking good questions and listening and caring and managing the emotions of the buyer and managing your own emotions and having a conversation. The best salespeople don't sell. They listen. And, you know, I mean, they're, obviously variations to that, but I just think it's if you can understand what the buyer's situation is and what they're trying to accomplish, and you truly listen to them, as you listen to the learning and development people, the people you're working with in your business, you know, it's like, what are they faced with? I mean, they're going through such challenges right now. They're dealing with staff that's working remotely. You guys understand that. But if you go in and say, well, you need to do this or buy this license or try hitting people hard right now, that's not going to work. So awareness, again, I go back to that word.
Yeah, it's interesting. I think the remote world in a way has made us all more empathetic. I think because so many of us are going through the same human emotions. I do notice myself having more authentic conversations in general. Like, people are more likely, to Ben's point, you know, when you see your prospects, like your clients' kids and their homes and, you know, their spouses and things like that, like it leads to a much more like authentic conversation, right? Whereas I think prior to all this, you know, I would say, you know, of course there's like building rapport and stuff, but I feel like now it's like an additional layer of support of rapport, because we're all going through, you know, very similar emotions right now, no matter like what, you know, where you live in the country, you know, even in the world, like we're all going through some very similar moments right now.
Some companies are doing really well and some are doing really poorly. And what I'm finding is it's the real contrast. So it's interesting, the three of us are talking and we're optimistic and we're outgoing and positive, yet there's the other extreme out there. And I think the same is true in the corporate world. Some companies, I mean, the technology companies are, wow, they're on fire. But, you know, if you're in the hospitality industry, my goodness sakes, these poor people travel, you know, it's tragic. And, you know, so it's a educational community. Oh my goodness, you know, my alma mater is Ohio Wesleyan, great small school. And, you know, Ben, you went to Wheaton. It's tough for these schools that are balancing remote education and remote learning, and they're not getting the enrollment dollars. So, I mean, again, that whole, everybody's world is in a roller coaster right now. So it's like the haves and the have nots to many degree.
Yeah, it's funny. There's a lot of old adages that I heard growing up that sort of, you know, they didn't really resonate. And then all of a sudden you become older and apparently wiser, and they start to, you know, some of the cliches start to click, and, you know, it's like, okay, walking, you know, a mile in someone else's shoes, like until you truly do that, like you're probably not going to be a very good seller. Like until you truly put on the hat of like Dean, like you just articulated, I'm an L&D person in the hospitality industry. I run L&D for hundreds of hotels on the East Coast, and we furloughed 3/4 of our staff. Until you actually like take off your I'm a salesperson at, you know, LinkedIn or wherever shoes and put on the I am this person, you're gonna stink as a seller, because you have to embrace who that person is to fully understand like what speaks to them. And so, you know, that's where I feel just like we sort of sit in an arsenal of riches with technology at this moment in time, because we can, you know, I can go back and listen to calls and hear to like re-hear from customers, like what's important to you, and, you know, hear from their own mouth, this is what's important to me. And, you know, I can actually like work through that and be like, okay, they said that multiple times. I really need to key in on that because that's important to them. So in many ways, I'm just like in awe of sellers 30, 40 years ago who didn't have the record keeping technologies that we have to actually remember, maintain, and think about the things that were important to their clients and their prospects in a given meeting, because I've got like a million different tools that I can do to sort of jog or use to jog my memory. But I think that principle is so important. Like, you have to become your prospect. You have to actually sit in their seat to know how to sell to them. But, you know, candidly, there's still so many calls where I don't do that on a day-to-day basis, because I just had a forecasting meeting, or we just released a new part of our product, or we have a team meeting and I see the stack ranking and these other reps are really climbing the leaderboard, and you're like, all right, let's get out there. Let's go find some quick wins to, you know, add, you know, however many $1,000s to, you know, my closed won revenue for this quarter. And it's just like, you've lost it right there. You've totally forgot that this is a profession that's all about people and what's important to them. And you've immediately, kind of like what we were talking about earlier, needs, you've become so self-focused on your needs that you've totally lost sight of what matters to that person. And I think that's probably why our profession is sometimes, you know, called into question as being credible or full of integrity.
Well, that's why when you guys are managing teams in a few years, and very soon, I'm imagining both of you guys have leadership, you know, of running organization, running teams, hopefully with LinkedIn for many years. And it's taking that experience, what you're learning now, so that when you are managing people, you understand it, or you're under, when you're managing a group of people providing direction. And if you've been there, then you understand it. As I work and I train people, and as I talk, some people are trained really well and some are not. And there are a lot of lousy managers out there. And fortunately, your company, I mean, I talk about it all the time. No company's perfect, but you have a lot of great leadership and a lot of great management, and it's striking how much better you are than many organizations.
That's kind. One question I actually had for you, Dean, and this is something that I've sort of started to become like a little bit more interested in as the years have gone by, is recognizing how my profession can inform my personal life and how my personal life can inform my profession. And so noticing that in a profession as human as sales is, we ought to be like recognizing or noticing the things that happen in our personal life and make a connection, being like, oh, that can make me a better seller. But for whatever reason, you know, sometimes over the last few years when I've gone to work, it's like I take off everything that I learned personally, and it's just like, okay, Bant, and you know, like who's owns the budget here, and what's the timeline, and I put all these like rigid parameters onto a selling process that I oftentimes would never implement in my personal life when just talking to a person. And so I'm really keen on hopefully long-term, like helping sellers recover just the personality of selling and the human element of selling. How does that, I guess, analysis strike you, just recognizing connections between how our personal and professional lives ought to inform one another?
I think early in my career, I tried to have the personality of a salesperson. I don't know whatever that means, but it's sort of like you have this type of structure and this style. And one of the things that I learned is like what you see here right now, this is me, both professionally and personally. And it's I try to listen in my personal life, and I try to listen in my business life, and I try to care and understand in both areas. Am I successful all the time? Obviously not. But it's too complicated to try to have a different style and a different approach in personal life and business life and how I work with my family. My statement that I said to organizations since the very first time I ran a group was family comes first. There you go. So at the end of the day, that's all that matters. And business will always be there. So you got to take care of your family first. Remember your great football player from Chicago, Gale Sayers. It's, you know, it's family, it's religion, and I am third. And that was his book. And so it's the managing your priorities. I'm going at a little bit of a circle here on your question, but it's managing the priorities of life and business and personal life. It gets too complicated. So just be yourself. Just be, this is me. I laugh at people, Dean, you're so like this, but this is easy. If I can just be myself in business and personal life, that's, it certainly makes life easier. Yeah. You see my flaws and you see my upbeat successes and disappointments. It's all there for everybody to see.
Yep. Yeah, I love that. I resonate with it. I usually tell people transparency is a love language for me. If I can be transparent with you and you in turn can get to some level of transparency with me, like we're going to be in great shape because I'm an open book or, you know, I try to keep it pretty transparent, and that's freeing for me, Dean, kind of like you were saying, like, I don't have to put on some, you know, mask when I come into work to be a salesperson on LinkedIn. Like, this is me, what you see is what you get. And if you're fortunate enough to work at a company that actually hires you for you, then they should let you be you. And so that means that I sell real differently than a lot of the folks on my team. The way that I approach customer problems is real different than people on my team. And, you know, the same goes for them. We all have uniqueness, individual strengths that make Dean, Dean, and make Davidson, Davidson, that make Ben, Ben. And it's important to leverage that when we're, you know, like you are an asset. You have unique things that make you, you. And if you get into the losing battle of comparing yourself to other salespeople, you're toast.
Yeah. It's you can overanalyze it, and it's a we each have our own personalities and our own stuff. If I tried to be serious, when I've tried to be very straightforward and like, you know, I talk like this and I talk about, you know, the marketplace and what the customer needs, that's a phoniness. But for some people, that's their personality. So you go, you just be yourself and don't try to model yourself after some specific style or some specific approach. Enhance the abilities you were given.
Yeah. And like on the other end of the spectrum, if there's Dean, you kind of mentioned like being serious and being, you know, the serene direct salesperson. Like for me, it's, I feel that maybe in my context, more just along the lines of like, I don't necessarily care about or buy into the whole hype culture of like, you know, you did this, you're the best, you as a salesperson. Like, you know, sometimes people will ask me like, oh, you know, well, like if you structure the deal this type of way, you get a kicker and, you know, that can help boost how much money you get here. And I honestly, if any organization ever wants to hire me as a salesperson, I'll play my hand up front and just say like, I really don't care about how I get comped. And you know, that's not really me. And I'm not going to shy away from that. And a lot of people are like, that's weird. Why are you in this profession? I'm like, sometimes I don't know. But you know, I don't necessarily want to shy away from the fact that like, that's just not really as important to me. And hopefully I can still succeed and thrive in this profession. I think there's sometimes ways in which that bites me in the butt because I don't care about it as much as I should, but like, I'm okay with that. Just let me be me.
Bless you. That's terrific. I think that's a great approach. That's good for you. I applaud you. I mean, I have a similar feeling. I just wanted to have fun and I enjoy what I do and I enjoy working with people. Let me ask you guys a question. What is the biggest negative or most difficult part of your job right now in sales or in life or whatever? I mean, when you say, God, this is tough, what is that? Is it your manager? I mean, we're not getting to specific names or everything, but what is there something that really drags you down?
Good question. I two things come to mind for me. One is the paradigm that I sort of mentioned earlier, where if I'm failing in sales, I can quickly parlay that to feeling like I'm failing as a person. And again, that's why I was saying this is a process I've been going through over the past couple of years of realizing like how I perform as a salesperson in a performance-based role in a performance-based industry is not indicative of how I am as a human being. And I struggle with that still. And I think a lot of salespeople struggle with that. If they do, they have no pulse and, you know, good for them. I mean, they can just turn that off a little bit better than I can. It's just not something I've been good at. The second thing is Fortunately, this has developed as I've had relationships with clients over the long haul. But a lot of times, especially in technology, I think in the software industry in general, buying and selling can feel very transactional. People, when they come to buy a given software product, they usually know about 98% of what the product does before they buy it. And they're not really keen mm-hmm. on having a relationship with a salesperson who can actually help them understand mm-hmm. what the product does and how it can be tailored to their needs. So I think there's a lot of things that salespeople do wrong. I also think there's poor buyer behavior too, that's been trained to just look at, you know, product stacked side by side and make an abstract decision instead of actually allowing salespeople to perform their art of selling and helping you understand by telling stories and contextualizing what a product can do for your business. And I just, I get bothered by that sometimes, that sales is too often a very transactional process. And I think that's the result of sometimes poor buying and poor selling behavior.
Two-way street. It's a two-way street.
So those are my answers, Davidson. I don't know what your observations would be if they differ, line up with that.
Yeah, I definitely can relate, you know, like for instance, like this half, right? I'm doing really well. I'm over 200%, right? So my worth is definitely very tied to that, especially as I, you know, just recently got married last week and, you know, planning kids and just bought a house, right? So it's hard for me to not look at my results or the outcomes as to like, oh, Davidson's a good person, right? Like, yes, I do a lot of like community service and like, but at the end of the day, you know, unfortunately and fortunately, like we're a business, right? So, you know, the numbers like do matter. You know, luckily we do work at a good company where, you know, it's not as like results driven as like maybe some other companies that I've worked for, because we do leadership and leverage and being a good person. Like that's the cool thing about working at LinkedIn. Everyone is a good human being. But at the end of the day, like we are a business, right? And you know, if I have consecutive quarters that I'm not doing well, like unfortunately, like, you know, I can be let go. So for me, just knowing that, and sometimes like things are out of our control, right? Like you said, like some weeks I'm just like, I could be taking off a week just to kind of relax and recharge. And then that's when all the deals come in, but it's weird. And then like some weeks I'm like, working really hard. I'm like working like 60 hour weeks. And like, it just seems like I'm like nothing is to show for it. So it's just weird how that goes. But, you know, like to both of your point, like just being a good person, you know, adding value, listening, like helping them like, oh, this would be helpful for you to show to your leadership team, like helping them have a seat at the business table. Like that makes me feel good. But some days like, we are far removed from it, right? Because, you know, after I'm done with it, like, you know, relationship manager and a customer service or success manager is more hands-on. So sometimes I do feel like, you know, a little bit like far away from it, but then sometimes I'll look back and be like, oh, okay, cool. Like they're learning diversity hiring or they're learning unconscious bias. So, but I have to like really go out of my way to kind of like look back and see like, okay, like I am impacting, you know, in a positive way. But I, you know, I know that's for me, like I like to be really close to, you know, like keeping in touch with the client. Like, oh, I think I would be a better relationship manager, you know?
Yeah, which is good because there's a lot of different roles in sales more generally. I think Davidson, when you were talking about, whatever the first thing you were talking about was, I sort of like recognized and remembered that it's probably important to remind salespeople that humility is probably one of the main things that we should be focusing on. Because I think I wrote a post about this a few weeks back, but there's a quote that's always stuck out to me. It's actually from a sermon. The pastor said, "You're probably not as good as you think. You're also probably not as bad as you think." And in sales, I think that's super, super important because, you know, Davidson, like you for the 200%, you know, quarters, which is awesome. Like, you know, it's probably important to be like, okay, I am doing well, and this is great. And I'm very thankful. But I'm not, you know, I'm not like the most amazing person in the world, because what about your coworker who is really struggling and they're at 62% to goal and they're living by themselves on, you know, the east side, and you're just like, oh man, that's kind of hard. And how do I feel that, unless I'm like humbling myself to actually be like, oh, that, you know, if a couple of things had gone differently, if a couple of deals had gone differently, like that could also, I could be in that situation. So yeah. Nobody wants to admit that in selling situations, but also, you know, on the other end of the spectrum, you're probably not as bad as you think. And if you are in a 62% quarter, three quarters in a row where nothing has gone right, like, you know what, if you're putting forth, I mean, this is kind of what Mastering the Basics talks about, not to promo Dean's book, but if your inputs are defined by effort and you're putting forth great effort and legitimately doing your best, like, I don't think you have a whole lot to get upset about. And, you know, I remember telling some sales reps I was training one time, some of the best advice I was ever given in sales was actually from my mom and dad growing up. When it came to grades growing up, they never, with my siblings and I, you know, put too much attention on what the grade was, as long as we were putting in effort. And my dad would always say, you do your absolute best and my mother and I are proud of you no matter what. And like, I don't know, salespeople, whether you're 25, 40, 60, like, you need to remember that, you know, rule that your parents told you in second grade. Like, do your absolute best with the role that you've been given, and you don't really have too much to hang your head about.
That's what a great philosophy. What great parents, and as parents, and then as you guys as leaders, and it's being able to do that with the people you manage someday. And you know, that question I asked you about, you know, how is business, or what are the things that are, or what's good and bad, is something I asked every salesperson I worked with through the years when I would do the, you know, my little one-on-ones. And I met with everybody, you know, throughout the course of the year, 150 different salespeople. It's like, what's working and what isn't? How are you? And it's asking that question, letting people open up. It's amazing what you hear, because you might assume, hey, Ben, you know, you're all right. You're doing your work with your church. You do your private stuff here. You do something, your love for Chicago, and you've got everything all together. But when you really ask the question, you say, hey, you know what I'm struggling with is X, Y, and Z. And the same thing with you, Davidson. You hear things, you assume, we assume that we know what people is, what's bothering, but until you ask and look them in the eye and say, what's really going on, that's when you learn. So,
yeah. And I keep adding stuff just because I think this conversation is good. But this is going to be a faith principle that I'll inject into this podcast. So, you know, in Christian teaching, there's this idea that, you know, the last shall be first, and the weak, actually what's weak in you can actually be used to display strength. And so what that's helped me understand, both as a person and as a professional, is like, hey, if it's beneficial for the sake of that other person to feel like they're more cared for and can be more honest and authentic about their weaknesses, why am I not leading with that? And so Dean, what you said, like, yeah, you know, sometimes people have told me like, oh, it seems like you have your life together. It's not true. It's a sham. You know, my life is a mess. I feel, not legit. I feel inauthentic. I wrong people still. And I need to be telling you that. I need to be leading with my weakness, much more than I do with, and that goes for everyone, with my friends and my family, with people I go to church with. Mm-hmm. But also with my colleagues, with my clients, as crazy as that can seem. And I roll my eyes anytime I go on LinkedIn and see these long tropes or success stories about, here's what I did to bring home the perfect deal that was a seven-figure deal, and this client thought we were the greatest things since sliced bread. It's like, dude, I mean, it's one of those for every 90 that I have that go the other direction, where I make a mistake in miscommunicating to a customer. I fudge something when I'm having a one-on-one with my boss. I say something disrespectful or hurtful to a coworker, and I'm a human. I do that stuff all the time. So I need to be leading with that much more professionally than I do. And I think we'd all be better for it if we led with our weakness.
Great advice. Great guidance. I'll work with you guys any day of the week. Where do I send my resume? Now, you guys are the best. I mean, but that's the, you know, we could do this every day. You know, I mean, I love the way you both think.
Yeah, well, this has been awesome. And yeah, I don't want to monopolize your whole evenings, but I think this is a good reminder for sales folks, because I'm fortunate enough that a lot of junior salespeople, like first time salespeople, will reach out to me for advice. So I'll definitely point them the way to this podcast, because I think, you know, there are so many highlights that we all see, right? Your president's clubs, all of your awards, you know, winning, you know, all these awards and stuff like that. But not many salespeople are authentic and have shared, like you both have, very truthfully, like, hey, like, you know, it's not always rainbows and butterflies, you know. And I think that's a good reminder. And I think if we all are a bit more authentic, and I'm guilty of it as well, right? If I want to share about, you know, I've had for two quarters, I've had like 60 something, like 70% something quarters, right? Like not too long ago. And if I share about like how troubling that was for me and how I literally was not able to sleep, like, you know, I think that's a more realistic representation versus me only highlighting like, you know, like two good quarters that I've had like more recently, right? So, yeah.
Yeah, man, do it. I mean, if we can hear that story, like, I think it's going to have far more of an impact on people who are struggling.
Bingo.
Than if you're like, hey, here's Davidson at 200%, then that person is going to be like, I'm so far from that. And I, you know, I stink. Another line, one liner I'll give you is, you know, our wounds are where the light shines through. And so if you can show people your 60% wounds, I think that's what would speak to them much more than your 200% wins. So let's do it, man. All three of us. I think it's what will be beneficial for colleagues and clients alike.
Here, here.
Awesome. I'll make a post and I'll make sure to tag you. You've inspired me to do that. I think that would be beneficial. But yeah, thanks everyone. Thanks Ben and Dean. You're both a pleasure to be with, and I can't wait to see, you know, how many more lives you both continue to impact throughout your careers. So thanks for taking the time. I really appreciate it.
Appreciate you, Davidson.
Davidson, you're the best. You too, Ben. Great to see you both. You guys are really stellar.
Yeah, you guys as well. Take care. Let's have a great week.
Let's do it.
Bye-bye now.
See you guys.